Hello and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Sarah Dykstra. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear about the Sunday alcohol sales final passage. Brandon Smith reports on the first debate between Indiana's three Republican candidates for U.S. Senate. And Carl Lissick, host of Green Fleet Radio, updates us on the latest from Gary Public Transportation Corporation. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The stroke of a pen is all that separates Indiana from legal Sunday alcohol retail sales. The state Senate voted one last time Thursday, February 22nd, to send to the governor a measure eliminating a Sunday sales ban that stood since Prohibition. House Speaker Brian Bosma says it's not this session's signature achievement, but
it's an important change that Hoosiers want.
Senate President Pro Tem David Long also downplayed the bill's passage.
But I think it's symbolically important that we've evolved our alcohol laws forward a little bit.
Long says he expects the governor to sign the bill next week, meaning Sunday alcohol sales will likely be legal beginning March 4th. You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Some property owners in northern Indiana are preparing to face eminent domain battles as plans for South Shore rail line improvements move forward this year. WVPE's Barb Anguiano reports one Indianapolis lawyer is hosting seminars to raise awareness of the ins and outs of eminent domain.
Phil Seaver is an Indianapolis attorney who focuses solely on eminent domain cases. He says the seminars are standard to his practice, and he's found they're the best way to get information out to communities. The earlier, the better.
This is me like planting Johnny Appleseed. This is me planting seeds so people will talk to their neighbors, talk to their friends, and start thinking more about what potential issues they're going to have down the road.
Seaver says properties are usually undervalued and residential property owners are left with few options of where to relocate. He plans to host more seminars as the South Shore expansion and double tracking project gains traction, primarily in Lake and LaPorte counties. Northern Indiana Commuter Transportation District President Michael Noland says no acquisitions will take place until required environmental studies are complete. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Barb Anguiano.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Average retail gasoline prices in northwest Indiana have risen almost 3 cents per gallon in the past week, averaging to $2.45 a gallon Sunday, February 18th. Lakeshore Public Radio Sharon Jackson has more.
This compares with the national average that has fallen just over 5 cents per gallon in the last week to $2.51 per gallon, according to gasoline price website GasBuddy.com. Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis for GasBuddy on Monday, said that prices last week jumped briefly to about $2.49 per gallon, and now things are cooling back off.
Northwest Indiana's average price is up about 3 cents from last week. That's as of midnight, but prices are down another penny since then, currently averaging about $2.45.
Prices Sunday were almost 26 cents per gallon higher than the same day 1 year ago and are just over 3 cents per gallon lower than a month ago. The national average has decreased almost 3 cents per gallon during the last month and stands just over 23 cents per gallon higher than this day 1 year ago. According to GasBuddy historical data, gasoline prices on February 19th in Northwest Indiana have ranged widely over the last 5 years at $1.60 in 2016 on the low side and $3.85 in 2013 on the high side. DeHaan says dead ahead on the calendar is still turnaround season at the nation's refineries, which promises at least some short-term pain or long-term gain.
When we talk about turnarounds, we're talking about refineries that are doing some work on their facilities in the next, we'll call it 1 to 2 months. This is the time of year when gasoline demand is usually bottoming out. And because there is kind of a lull in demand, refineries start to do replacement, upgrades, normal wear and tear work, inspections to make sure that their refineries are all ready for the summer driving season.
He says entering the next 1 to 2 months, as part of that maintenance, refineries won't be producing quite as much gasoline. For Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Sharon Jackson.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Former State Representative Mike Braun and Congressman Todd Rokita traded barbs while Congressman Luke Messer tried to stay above the fray. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports on the first debate between Indiana's three Republican candidates for U.S. Senate.
Todd Rokita set the tone early, using his opening statement to jab his opponents with oft-repeated claims that Mike Braun is new to the Republican Party and that Luke Messer doesn't live in Indiana.
Only one contender up here, two pretenders.
Braun was happy to hit back, accusing Rokita and Messer of being, in his words, career politicians.
These guys have spent a career creating roadblocks and doing things for most of us in business we're not happy with.
Messer tried not to engage, criticizing his fellow candidates for not staying focused on incumbent Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly.
The only way Democrats can win in this state is when Republicans are divided and throw stones at each other.
The debate was sponsored by conservative group Americans for Prosperity Indiana. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Lawmakers in the House made a few small changes to a controversial sex education bill. But as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay reports, debate in the chamber Thursday, February 22nd, took an unexpected turn.
Senate Bill 65 says schools can't teach sex ed without the consent of parents, shifting the current opt-out system to an opt-in. But a new change to the bill sets a time limit for how many days parents have to consent. If parents don't respond to a second note home asking for permission, the school can teach sex education, no parent signature required. And Representative Vernon Smith says he could support the bill as it heads to the full chamber with a few more adjustments.
I have no problem with notifying parents and letting parents know what you're teaching as part of accountability.
Smith says he wants to take a second look at how many days parents have to respond with their consent. Right now, the bill offers 45 days. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Indiana Republican U.S. Senator Todd Young is traveling the state to hear from Hoosiers in an effort to help shape his agenda in office. WFYI's Drew Dottolin reports it comes more than a year after Young was sworn into office.
Todd Young calls it his fair shot agenda, and it outlines four key areas: opportunity, safety, health, and better government. For the first stop in a series of roundtable discussions, the senator met with community and business leaders in Indianapolis to talk about the government's role in tackling these big issues. One local church leader argued government programs, while helpful, often create new problems that hold people back. Young agreed, emphasizing the importance of public-private partnerships.
Our country has a rich history of religious institutions, not-for-profit institutions, community volunteers, filling gaps as opposed to turning to government first.
Young says his solutions to the agenda involve increasing chances for upward mobility, empowering law enforcement, and improving health care access. He says he also wants to expand public-private partnerships and reduce government waste. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Drew Dodlin.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Carl Lissick, host of Green Fleet Radio, which is made possible by its South Shore Clean Cities, talks with David Wright, planning and marketing manager for the Gary Public Transportation Corporation. You can hear Green Fleet Radio every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And here's that conversation.
Well, thank you for that introduction. And today our guest is Mr. David Wright. He's the planning and marketing manager for the Gary Public Transit Corporation of GPTC. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, getting right into it, David, there are two areas of activity that GPTC is working on: regional transport, the Lakeshore area, and the expansion on the Broadway corridor. Can you give our listeners some details on both of these projects?
Okay. Well, the Lakeshore area, that's the area near Hammond, Highland, and Munster. We have had some fluctuations in service the last year or so. As many people may know, we actually cut service out there because of cost issues in 2017. Because of the The investment from the Lake County government and the city of Hamilton, we're actually going to be bringing a lot of that service back.
Wonderful.
Starting in February.
Mm-hmm.
The Broadway corridor, we have been planning some service improvements for several years on that corridor, and they're finally going to come into fruition on February 19th as well, where we're going to be upgrading our service between Gary and Crown Point. More routes, more frequency in service, mm-hmm. and better bus stations. So
wonderful.
Both of those expansions launch on February 19th.
And if people want to find out more information on that, where they can find, the routes, mm-hmm. The times, things like that, where would they get that from?
Well, the best location actually is our Facebook page, where we have a pretty active page where we've been putting the schedules up. We're going to be putting the schedules up for the Broadway service this week. We launched a shuttle in Merrillville a couple of weeks ago, and that schedule launched there too. Our website is www.gptcbus.com, and actually that's going to be improving probably in the next couple of weeks as well. So all of that information, including our bus schedules, are on gptcbus.com.
You know, a lot of exciting things going on, David, and I know that with GPTC you've just really been working on a whole boatload of new projects, new activities, mm-hmm. and it's very exciting for our area. So, as we talk about the benefits of public transit to those who don't use it, can you kind of describe how it really improves our standard of living in the region?
Well, what we like to focus on are two things. The reduction in cars on the road, mm-hmm. which even if you've never stepped foot on one of our buses, you see that impact.
Mm-hmm.
There are some locations on Broadway, for instance, where we are reducing automobile travel by 10% on your average day. So fewer cars for you to deal with on the road. And in addition, those fewer cars also means less air pollution.
Absolutely.
And those are two things that, in my opinion, and in a lot of studies, a lot of agencies that are looking to invest in the metropolitan area, they're looking at some of those issues, and that includes the prevalence of public transportation and air quality.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those things are being benefited by transit.
Absolutely. In addition to Gary Public Transit Corporation, are there smaller transit providers in the area?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we are actually, just more specifically, I'm working on redoing our system map.
Okay.
And our system map since 2014 has included the route system for East Chicago Transit.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of sections, locations where we intersect, and we do our route planning together in tandem, so we're not stepping on each other's toes. And when we put out our system maps, we make sure both of those routes, both of those systems, are on there. We work well with North Township Dial-A-Ride, mm-hmm. in the Hammond Highland Munster Whiting area. They've got a free Dial-A-Ride service, and we have been working for years on communicating with them so that their riders and our riders are actually able to chain their trips from our two agencies, because they serve areas we don't serve,
sure.
and we serve areas that they don't serve. So we try to make sure that we are able to have that potential to allow someone to transfer from one route to another.
And again, I think you hit the nail on the head, excuse me, with working together. And, mm-hmm. and I know that mm-hmm. Gary Public Transit, and you in particular, with the different meetings that we've attended, you're like our local spokesperson for local transit agencies. And, we always love, you're keeping up on all the technologies, some of the things that are going on across the country, and how you can better serve, our clientele here, mm-hmm. in Northwest Indiana. So has there been any investments in transit by regional agencies or communities?
Yes. That's something that actually has changed drastically in the past three mm-hmm. years. The town of Merrillville and the city of Gary have been working with GPTC and the Indiana Department of Transportation and the bus shelters in the Broadway corridor.
Right.
If you've been driving on Broadway in the last couple of weeks and you've seen the construction, the installation of those shelters, and they're almost done, then they should be done in time for the Broadway Metro Express to launch. The town of Merrillville, in fact, when they agreed to fund the bus shelters, asked us if it was possible to fund actual public transportation. So the mm-hmm. Merrillville shuttle, which launched a couple of weeks ago, is actually in part funded by the town of Merrillville. And lastly, the not really lasting because there's no more to, as I mentioned earlier, the city of Hammond and Lake County government, they're investing in the Lakeshore service, which is allowing us to bring service back there. And lastly, the Ivy Tech Community Colleges, they are purchasing naming rights for one of our new routes, which which demonstrates that they see the value in allowing public transportation to benefit all three of their major campus areas. Wonderful. In Chicago, Gary, and in Crown Point, Maryville.
Wonderful. So as we wrap up our program, what's the next step for Gary Transit in Northwest Indiana? You know, are you going to be using any type of alternative technologies in the future?
That's what we're looking into. Mm-hmm. We are actually working with some of the staff of South Shore Clean Cities to try to figure out the best step in that direction, you know, either compressed natural gas or electrified vehicles. We're planning to do a fleet audit to see what would be best. There have been a lot of changes on the electric and solar energy field. So mm-hmm. we're looking to see how best to benefit Northwest Indiana when it comes to the cost. But it's definitely a direction we feel we need to go. It's the next plateau.
So as we close out the program, your contact information website again, David?
Well, my information is planningmanager@gptcbus.com. If anyone has any questions on any of the things that we've talked about today, our website is www.gptcbus.com. Both our Facebook and our Twitter feeds are Gary Transit, and we monitor that constantly, not just for route updates, but you know, information on our service changes. And there's a lot going on. Again, Lakeshore Service and Broadway Metro Express service is going to be launched on February 19th of this month.
Very exciting, David. We look forward to having you back on the show, and that will do it for today's edition of the Green Fleet Radio. Thank you again to David Wright, Planning and Marketing Manager for the Gary Public Transportation Corporation. And Green Fleet Radio airs three times every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm your host, Carl Lissick, and thanks for joining us. And remember, it's never too late to begin your environmental legacy. Thank you.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. John Kane, host of Eye in the Arts, talks with Eric Tucker, whose exhibit is being presented by the South Shore Arts. Here's that conversation.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts is artist Eric Tucker, a sculptor who is currently teaching at South Suburban College. Is that right, Eric?
That's right.
And previously at Indiana University Northwest.
That's right.
And you work closely with Neil Goodman.
Yes, I was his assistant for almost 10 years.
And that's, Neil's moved out to California, right?
He has.
Yeah. So, although he just recently had a show at Carl Hammer Gallery.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And you work out of, you live here in Northwest Indiana.
Yes, I do.
But you work out of a studio at the, is it Zhou?
The Joe.
Joe. Joe.
Joe B. Art Center in
Joe B. Art Center.
Bridgeport neighborhood of Chicago. They're on 35th and Morgan.
I never can say that right. And it's spelled Z-H-O-U.
That's right. As long as you don't say Zhou, it's okay.
Okay. Why? Is that a bad word?
Well, no. It's just, that's. I think that's the most common mispronunciation.
Oh, I don't. I've never said Zhou. I've always put a Z in front of it. Okay. Well, anyway, enough of that. So, Eric, you have been making a sculpture for how long?
Well, I finished undergraduate school actually 20 years ago this spring.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Believe it or not. And I guess I could say I really started making sculpture then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the show is. That's such a perfect time for me, you know, in my life, because it's a nice time to look at about 13 years of my sculptural production. I have some pieces that date back about to the early 2000s, 2005 maybe.
Okay. And this is a show, a two-artist show,
right,
at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts in Munster. It's the South Shore Arts exhibit, put together by our exhibits director, Bridget Earnshaw. And the other artist is named Ryan Boyer.
Rin.
See,
yes.
I can't pronounce anything correctly today. So, and she is also she also maintains a studio at the Joe Brothers
right
Art Center. Joe
she's,
B.
Yes, she's just down the hall and around the corner from me. In fact, you know, it was so funny. When Bridget pitched the idea of the show to me, she mentioned Rin's work with mine, and you know, I never thought about the possibility, and it, you know, it was so obvious as soon as she said it, I couldn't believe it, because
you would think that such disparate work would not work together,
mm-hmm.
But it certainly does. I've been watching Bridget install the exhibit, which is, of course, now open. And this, the show runs through the towards the end of April, right?
I think beginning of April.
Beginning of April.
Yeah,
okay.
It'll be up for 2 months.
Yeah.
Beginning of February.
Nice
too,
long show. And, of course, the space is enormous. It's 5,000 square feet.
It is enormous.
Yes, when you start trying to fill it.
And right. There's a reason we have work dating back 13 years in the show.
So your work is super colorful and it's shapes. How would you describe it? You're the artist. You do that.
Oh, well, the work is all based on like visual elements of line, plane, color, volume. And there's a use of pattern throughout most of the works. Some of them, I have a few new pieces that are freestanding on the floor, and some of them hang from the ceiling, and the majority of them mount to the wall. Mm-hmm. So they're almost like relief sculptures. Mm-hmm. And all the sculptures are based on geometric forms, mm-hmm. so they're very angular in nature. And almost like drawing in space, really, with thin metal rods.
And Rin's work is more subjective, mm-hmm. in that it has recognizable forms in the form of people,
right,
doing things,
right. Right, there are many people, you know, walking. And she said once that when she's around people, they always wonder if she's working, you know, if she's watching them, trying to record expressions or something.
So your work is three-dimensional.
Yes.
And her work is two-dimensional.
Yes, but it's a great combination. Not only do we share, I think, an interest in color, but you know, my works are they're sculpture, kind of by the most reductive definition of sculpture. You know, mm-hmm. three-dimensional objects, right. But they lean so much towards drawing and painting. And her works, they're painting, you know, they're two-dimensional. Right. But then she has some that stand up out in space, and then some that are cut out, almost forming like a relief sculpture. So I think we're both, you know, if you had a sculpture on one end of a spectrum and painting on the other, we're both really close to the middle mm-hmm. of that.
That's true. Well, it's a very handsome show. I encourage people to come and see it. There's no charge for admission at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts, and we're having a marvelous reception on Sunday afternoon, March 4th.
That's right.
1 to 3, so people can have an opportunity to talk with you and Rin. Are you going to speak that day?
I think we have something scheduled.
I think we do, too.
I think it'll be short, but
good.
People can always come up with questions,
exactly.
too.
Exactly. Okay, Eric. Well, congratulations on the show. It's terrific looking, and thanks for being here to tell us about it.
Thank you, and thanks to everyone at South Shore Arts for giving us the opportunity to show.
Absolutely, and thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Eye on the Arts.
Regionally speaking, host Chris Nolte revisits the conversation with Irene Boone Phillips and Mike Maska, both with Franciscan Health, which is a lead agency for the Lake County Smoking Prevention and Cessation Program. The program's anti-smoking public information campaign continues this week. Here's that conversation.
Well, apparently, there has been many years of suppression of information. So what we're seeing now with this court order is that information is now coming out, where we are educating the public, where the tobacco company, in their own words, are admitting that nicotine is addictive, secondhand smoke is dangerous, there is no safe level of exposure to secondhand smoke.
When you have such an admission, it's certainly newsworthy in itself. It was back then. It still is today. And I imagine now, especially with this public information campaign that is underway, that it's probably become even more important for Hoosiers and the entire American public to know about the dangers of smoking.
Yes, yes. And as a matter of fact, this is an opportunity for the community to kind of tell their story. We're going across the state of Indiana, and all across the state, we have our community members that are telling their story about how tobacco has impacted their lives. We have a friend, Nancy, who told us about how her mother, who went to work where they allowed smoking in a work area, in a workspace, and she came down with lung cancer, never smoked a day in her life. Mm-hmm. So secondhand smoke took her life. And those are the types of stories that we are hearing throughout the state.
If you will, give us a little rundown on the statistics about the dangers of smoking, and better still, if you can kind of bring it home to Northwest Indiana.
Well, that is something that I think that Mike is very well with the statistics.
Okay.
So, Chris, thanks for having us on today. And as we kind of go through, and this is a topic that's important to not only Franciscan Health, but also our partnering hospitals that represent the nine largest healthcare organizations or hospitals within Lake County specifically. For years and years, we've struggled with tobacco and the nicotine addiction, and we want to help people kind of come through the tobacco recovery. That being said, Lake County has perpetually had a high smoking rate and an adult smoking rate specifically. Mm-hmm. We recognize within Lake County until last year that the rate of smoking tobacco and smoking cigarettes in Lake County was in excess of 26%. And that's not a Mike and Irene number. That's actually a number that has been determined through the Indiana State Department of Health and some of the surveys that they do to determine populations that that are at risk that smoke cigarettes. The underpinning of that is there were over 90,000 people when it was 26%. The most recent data is it's at 24%. So that's almost one in four adults that smoke cigarettes. It's a significant spend economically, and more importantly, the unseen health consequences. They're downstream. We chalk it up as frequently that some people are just they're becoming aged or becoming deconditioned, and in reality, it's the negative effects of tobacco. Mm-hmm. So still close to that 90,000 mark of number of people that smoke in Lake County.
Give us an idea in context with the rest of the Hoosier State. How does Northwest Indiana, with such a high percentage of smokers in Lake and surrounding counties, how does that compare to the rest of the state of Indiana?
If it was a good thing, we would say we were above average.
Right.
So it's not a good thing. And we would say Lake County specifically is actually higher than the state average. And we're actually essentially about 1.5 times the national average. Mm-hmm. So, again, if that was college graduation rates, we would pound our chest and jump up and down for joy. That's not the case with cigarette smoke. And again, we want what's right for folks and residents of Northwest Indiana, specifically within Lake County.
We talk about adults being smokers, but unfortunately now we find that we have high schoolers, younger people that have taken up smoking as well, too. And there's also, too, this other issue that I guess doesn't really come to light sometimes. It kind of flies under the radar, so to speak. It's how young people are using vaping and methods other than burning tobacco to get hooked onto the habit or starting out that way, and that in turn builds onto the habit. Eventually, they'll start actually smoking cigarettes or other materials.
Correct. That is a concern, and that is what is actually happening, where the tobacco industry is promoting these products, the electronic cigarette products. For instance, if you look at what they call the juice, the sauce, the blow sauce, it's in flavors of cotton candy, green apples, all those type of flavors that are attractive to youth. And so that's how the tobacco company is continuing to target our youth and to get them started. The electronic cigarettes is not safe. It is nicotine. We know that nicotine changes the brain, and it particularly changes the brain of a youth, of a teenager, because their brain is still developing.
Or it's actually funny. I guess it's really just another form of nicotine that before, if you were burning tobacco, you've got the nicotine that way and all the other byproducts, so to speak, of burning tobacco. But now you have this more concentrated program that's coming out to just by a pure chemical, right?
Yes. Yes.
One of the things that comes into play as well, too, and how I'm sure that Northwest Indiana is ranked, certainly by the Indiana State Department of Health, on being so high in the number of smokers, is also dealing, too, with whatever, I guess, cost financially that there is. We know how much it costs Northwest Indiana in all the respects for smoking and for the problems of smoking?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we do know that it costs each household, whether you're a smoker or not, each household spends about $903 towards smoking-related diseases and smoking-related health care costs. Mm-hmm. That's each household. We have about 839 deaths in Lake County alone that are attributable to smoking. And the economic burden of secondhand smoke across the state is about $165 million.
I know that the state also, of course, tracks financial costs by whatever the taxes that might be assessed on cigarettes when they're sold at the retailers across the Hoosier state. And I guess the rankings aren't very good for Indiana as far as being among those states which tax the most. In turn, would be the best incentive for not smoking to begin with, I would think.
No, we're not. As a matter of fact, according to the latest report from the Lung Association, we have a felling grade when it comes down to the cigarette tax. We also have a felling grade when it comes down to the age to purchase tobacco products. Those are one of the things that we want our community to know that they have a voice, and it is time to raise their voice. Raising cigarette tax is a sure way to implement a measure that works to help the kids from to not initiate smoking, and also to help those who smoke to quit.
We're talking with Irene Boone Phillips, who is a program coordinator for the for Franciscan Health, and both she and our guest also in the studio, Mike Meska, are with Franciscan Health. And she is working with the Lake County Community Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program. Mike works directly with Franciscan Health as an administrative director in respiratory therapy and the problems that smoking can often bring to people who unfortunately contract it here in Indiana. We're talking with Irene Boone Phillips and Mike Meska, both work with Franciscan Health and are both acutely knowledgeable of the problems of smoking and about the results of it. And Mike, if you will, tell us in your work directly within Franciscan Health, with the hospitals and the clinics, tell us about the problems that the doctors and the nurses and the other clinicians encounter every single day, it seems like, from the results of so many people in Lake County and Northwest Indiana smoking.
Sure, yeah. There are so many. They're really kind of innumerable, but I'd be glad to share some of the stories from the bedside, so to speak. I'm actually a registered respiratory therapist by training, so I'm a clinician, work alongside nurses and physicians, and for the last 28-plus years, we've seen the terror that the tobacco epidemic has really lent itself to all the different communities where I've worked, specifically within Northwest Indiana, cases of lung cancer, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or COPD, emphysema, challenges with controlling asthma, other things that really kind of relate to secondhand smoke. We see these things continue to we continue to see these things, whether they present as a individual that shows up in the emergency department that's short of breath, or shows up in the clinic or their office or the physician's office, so many different ways that it can present manifest. But essentially, many of it can get directly traced back to tobacco. In fact, Chris, approximately 4 out of 10 cancers are directly attributable to tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
4 in 10, 40%. That's a significant number, yet we continue to have issues with tobacco causing all kinds of cancer. It's not just lung cancer. 1/3 of all cancer deaths are directly attributable to tobacco. So 1 in 3, if you know someone that has cancer, if you know 3 people that have cancer, there's a chance, statistically speaking, that 1 in 3 of those deaths, if they have passed on, 1 in 3 of those deaths were likely tied to tobacco. Let that sink in for a minute. It's astounding. And so years ago, from a hospital perspective, we used to get paid. The more we did, the more we get paid.
Right.
And so there's an old adage that says hospital presidents would drive in the morning and they'd see the parking lot full and they'd say, wow, it's going to be a great day. The way the payments are shifting over the course of time really kind of focus more on a population of people. And so we want people to be cared for in the right setting, which isn't the hospital necessarily. Hospitals are great places to come and get lots of medications, get some intensive therapy, but wellness continues to be the trend. So the hospital president of the future would see a hospital parking lot empty or really not many people in it and say, wow, it's going to be a great day.
For Lakeshore Update, I'm Chris Nolte.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program's link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure to search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sarah Dykstra.